With the holiday season upon us, we've decided to get well and truly into the festive spirit and come to a real winter wonderland. And no place fits that description better than the northern Russian Republic of Karelia. Isn't that right? The Ruskyala Express is one of the few steam trains still regularly in service in the country. The smell of the coal, the hiss of the steam, and the sound of the whistle, it's almost like going back to a bygone era. So without further ado, let's get on board and get underway. Sergei, there's something magical about travelling on a steam train these days, especially at this time of year. They seem to have a lot more character than the modern electric trains. What do you think it is?
Journeying on a steam locomotive is always an extraordinary experience. Unlike our everyday trips on modern trains, there's something truly magical and enchanting about it. The steam locomotive has a unique charisma, almost like it's alive. That is where its charm lies. This technology dates back to the Tsarist and Soviet eras. Older generations remember these trains and steam engines in operation. However, younger generations have never seen them in real life. Some don't even know what they're called.
So it's like a new experience for some and nostalgia for others.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
And tell me about the Ruskyala Express itself. Where did the route come from and what makes it so special?
The Ruskyala Express runs between the city of Sotavala and Ruskyala Mountain Park. This jewel of Karelia is a marble quarry that once played a vital role in the construction of St. Petersburg.
So it's a historical route. And this interior, it's just magnificent. What era is it supposed to reflect?
This train is a combination of different historical elements. For example, the locomotives and cars originate from the Soviet era. The cars date back to the 1970s and 80s, while the locomotives are from the 1950s, the post-war period. However, the interiors have been recreated with design elements from the Nikolaevskaya Railway, representing the Tsarist imperial era. The car we are currently in is theatrically styled to reflect the Soviet period.
Well, it's absolutely wonderful. Sergei, if you ask any Russian what they associate with a train trip here in the country, I bet they'll say it's this glass and the ornate metal holder. Where did this tradition come from and why is tea always served in this type of glass?
The railway tradition of serving tea in glass holders is above all a practical one. Tea is served hot and the glass contains boiling water, making it necessary to have an insulator or stand to hold the glass comfortably. During the imperial era, these holders were ornate, jewelry-like items, commonly found in wealthy households, but by the end of the 19th century, more affordable and practical glass holders became widespread. Since then, the tradition has endured, and tea on trains is still served in these holders. They're often made from nickel, brass, or copper, while the more luxurious versions are crafted from silver and occasionally gold.
Wow, I've not seen them yet. But Sergei, cheers. Thank you so much for telling me about the Ruskyala Express.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Доброе утро.
Доброе.
Для вас ваш чай.
Спасибо вам большое. Спасибо. Roskiala Express isn't just a train ride. It's a whole luxurious experience that gives you a real feeling of what life would have been like for the Tsars in Russia. If you want to go back the way you came, so the Roskiala Express uses this giant turntable to do a 180. Sergei, you're a driver of the Roskiala Express train, and I can't think of anyone better to tell us more about the engine itself. How different is it driving a steam train like this from, say, a diesel or an electric train?
Production of these steam engines started in 1945.
Really?
To start one of these, you needed to fire up the furnace and get it up to a certain temperature and pressure. To get the train moving, the driver opens and closes valves, relying on gut feeling. There's no tech to assist to determine exactly how much steam is needed to feed the engine and get it moving.
Exactly how much water and coal do you use on this route?
A 12-hour shift, the train consumes 3 to 4 tons of coal and approximately 15 to 20 tons of water.
It's quite some figures there, Sergei. Now, I've seen the inside of the cabin, and it seems a bit cramped, a bit dirty because there's all the dust from the coal, and it's quite physically involved, the work. What drew you to it?
What drew me to this work is the fact that when you drive a steam engine, you sort of feel it has a soul. You kind of become one with it while driving. And it's a whole different feeling. It's addictive. One day you realize that you want more and more of this interaction with the machine.
And you don't get that feeling from modern trains?
Modern trains don't give you that feeling. They're totally different.
How long did it take for you to learn to drive a steam train like this or requalify?
To be honest, I've been working on this train for 10 years and I'm still learning.
Really?
Every trip is different. The train may behave differently every time and you always have to be on the lookout for any irregularities. Mm-hmm. Ready to handle them and drive on. It's something you never stop learning to do. Each steam train behaves differently.
So you have to get to know each train.
Each has its own character.
And do you have a favorite one?
I can't say I have a favorite one. They are all my favorites. You just have to figure out each of them and learn to control them.
Now, we live in an age where we have super modern, comfortable electric trains. But what do you think still attracts people to steam trains like this from a bygone era? Do you think it's a certain sense of nostalgia, romanticism?
Well, I think that people who don't know their history have no future. People are attracted to the history of trains, the way the engines have developed. All the modern locomotives that we have now originate from steam engines. People want to know the history, how it all began.
Our festive train ride might be over, but the magic doesn't end there. Karelia's enigmatic landscape is shrouded in ancient legends and myths. And we've come to Roskiala Mountain Park, which has a rich mining history. So let's dig deeper.
Anton, what can you tell us about the landscape here in Karelia and what does it tell us about the ancient geology of the region?
The whole landscape was carved out by a glacier. It's quite incredible when you think about it. More than 10,000 years ago, the glacier worked like powerful sandpaper, or a coarse file, literally scraping away at the surface. It revealed what geologists call the Baltic Shield, or the Fennoscandian Shield as it's known internationally. It was these rocks, stones and minerals that created this amazing palette of colors and textures. Some of these stones have volcanic origins. Take marble, for example.
These ones that we see here.
It's actually transformed deep underground, where extreme heat and pressure created these beautiful folds and stripes we see today.
And what sort of ethnic groups live in Karelia? And what can you tell us about their relationship with this region and nature here, both past and present?
This region has seen more than 10 different peoples interacting across vast distances for centuries. The history goes back more than 1,000 years. After the glacier retreated, the Sami were the first to settle here, though they later moved further north. Russians called them the Lapari. They herded reindeer, hunted and fished. Then came the Karelians, who were more agriculture-oriented and quite industrious. The unique microclimate of this area really shaped how these peoples lived. They had to live in harmony with nature. There was simply no other way to survive here. It's also a place where you can see how the landscape shapes our people's mindset. Even newcomers who settle here adapt to this reality in just 10, 15 or 20 years, drawing inspiration from the territory and eventually living just like true Karelians.
Now, I know that Karelia isn't just famous for its marble like this. It's also known as the land of 1,000 lakes. Can we go and see some of them?
Yes, let me show you one of our lakes.
So how come there are so many lakes here in Karelia?
Most of our lakes were formed by the glacier, which carved out huge grooves as it moved across the terrain. Those grooves later filled with water. These lakes are simply beautiful and never fail to inspire us. They're like the eyes of nature reflecting the sky above.
How has the prevalence of so many bodies of water like this influenced local beliefs and folklore? And are there any stories you can tell us about it?
Every body of water in Karelia has its own guardian spirit. And there's a chief guardian, like a senior water spirit called Ahti. He's in charge of the whole territory, deciding where fish should swim and who deserves a good catch. You can be blessed with a good catch if you understand nature's laws, if you don't take more than you need, and if you live in harmony with your local lake, if you don't litter. These beliefs are still very much alive today, and local people really try to maintain that harmony with nature. And those who break the rules, well, nature has its own harsh way of dealing with them. And that's what we believe around here.
So you mentioned the Vodyanoi here, the water spirit. I've been in Karelia a while now, and I'm getting the feeling that the trees, the rocks, the water, they all carry a certain significance. And some people believe that they are inhabited by spirits here.
There's a whole new family of mythical creatures here. We call them the Mamoriks. It's an attempt to give a modern twist to the old-time beliefs in friendly spirits.
Okay, will you show me, please?
Yes, let's go and meet them. Meet our oldest Mamorik. He symbolizes the wisdom contained in the Ruskelia Mountain Park's nature. His name is Ukko. He's placed here for a reason. His mission is to guard the entrance to the underground world.
Right.
Let's go and take a look.
Let's have a look, yeah. Wow.
This is the entrance to the Ruskela Caves. This very place is, or rather was, a mountain called Green Mountain. As you can see, there's little left of it because of decades of marble mining. And now, I suggest we go and see the caves inside the Green Mountain.
Let's go and take a closer look.
It's absolutely worth seeing.
So these are the unique underground caves in Ruskiala. What makes them so special, Anton?
This is the very heart of the Roskelia Mountain Park. The entrance to the caves is actually shaped like a heart, too. So it's the beating heart of the area in every sense. It's our new place of power, a place that inspires growth, development, creativity, because this project has given a new life to the old Roskelia marble quarries as part of our history and culture, which is absolutely invaluable. Roskelia Marble Quarries was the name of the enterprise that mined marble back here in 1896. So this place is both about unique nature and technology. And it has this mesmerizing look to it, which makes it almost otherworldly and mysterious. I absolutely love and admire it every single time. I'm very proud of it.
The landscape here is dotted by giant boulders and unusual rock formations, Anton. They even say that giants used to roam the land here. Is that how the ancient people explained the landscape?
Yes, there's a legend about giants. The mysterious Metililainen, who could easily pick up huge rocks and throw them around, so locals, Karelians, had to watch out for them. And then they had an alliance with people, according to one of the legends, and helped the Karelians move these huge boulders to the edges of the fields. So there was even a period of cooperation between the giants and regular people. But of course, that's a legend. Although, what's interesting is that there might have been something that gave rise to these beliefs. There are rumors that the archaeologist, Schwind, found an unusually tall human skeleton. Although, where is it?
We don't know.
But I know there are idols made out of stone, ancient petroglyphs, and even mazes made out of stone. Did the local people here bestow special meaning onto the rocks here?
Indeed, there are the so-called magical rocks, rocks that are alive, or have powers at least. That's what ancient people believed. As a fellow of the Karelian Science and Research Center, I'm convinced that any fairy tale or legend usually has a scientific explanation. And the ancient people, such as the Sami, Karelians, and the Veps, thought that such rock formations had special powers. They made offerings to them, talked to them. The key thing about it was that all this allowed people to explain the landscape. I believe that we can safely say that these ancient rituals were in fact precursors of modern geology, the science about landscape and terrain, and modern geography. And the Roskelia Mountain Park is a unique place where we can talk about the history of marble mining, about ancient beliefs, and about the present-day life of Karelia.
The new year is just around the corner, and it's often a good time to reflect on the year just gone and to wonder what the next one has in store. But to take the guesswork out of it, we've come to the site of an ancient settlement of the Sami people here in Karelia, where we hope to find out exactly what 2025 holds for Inland Visions. Gunislav, this is an ancient site of the Sami people. I see you have a lot of these wooden totems on the grounds here. What do they symbolize?
The Sami people have been pagans for a very long time. Even when Christianity came to their lands, they officially adopted it, but remained pagans in their hearts, continuing to worship their ancient gods and ancestors. And here we can see some of those gods. For example, Miandash here is a god that's half human, half reindeer. He's regarded as the forefather of the Sami, So, in a way, the Sami and the reindeer are relatives.
Now, as far as I know, the Sami, they didn't celebrate New Year, Christmas, like we do. Obviously, it's December here. Many people are preparing for those holidays. But they did have a festival of the pure snow. Can you tell me about that, please, Velislava?
Of course, in ancient times, the Sami couldn't have had New Year, because back then, they were a whole different nation, with a different calendar and different traditions. Now, of course, the Sami celebrate New Year just like everyone else, but they also keep their ancient tradition of celebrating Pure Snow Day on January 7th. On that day, the Sami bathe in snow to cleanse themselves from everything old, outdated, and unnecessary. On that day, people also make a wish. For a wish to come true, you write it down and then burn that note in a fire. Now we can go to our fire and do just that.
Perfect. Let's do it. Velislava, you have this tradition where you have to write a wish on a bit of paper and then throw it into the flames. Is there any specific way that I need to formulate this wish? Can I wish for anything? And if I tell someone about it, will the wish not then come true?
One thing is to make your wish as detailed as possible. If you just say, I want to be happy, you might just lose your mind and start smiling for no reason. So you need to say exactly what makes you happy. And of course, do not tell anyone what you wished for so you don't jinx it. In order for a wish to come true on New Year's Eve, Monkalsa, the Sami people's Santa Claus, collects the wishes from people and throws them into his magic fire, which has to be made in a cauldron. Then the wishes are granted. But since Monkalsa is not here yet, as New Year's Eve is a few weeks away, people can give their wishes to a shaman.
I'm ready.
Then put your wish into the shaman's drum.
Okay. There we are.
And I will call on the spirits of the north, south, east, and west. And now we can burn the piece of paper with your wish.
So where did this tradition come from? What's the belief surrounding it, Vyacheslav?
The fire here, it has always been considered to be a messenger between the earth and the sky, because the smoke rises up and reaches the spirits and gods. This way, they hear us, so sacrifices were often thrown into the fire in the old days. And to make your wish come true, we have burned your note.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to float up to the sky now.
That's right, and it goes straight to the upper world.
Superb. So why are deer so sacred to the Sami people?
We Sami say that we are reindeer people, because reindeer help us create our homes. They are our transportation, our clothes, our food, our medicine, and our soul. In fact, in ancient times, the Sami covered their houses, or kuvaksas, with reindeer skins. They made clothes from these skins, treated diseases with the blood of the reindeers and their antlers, and naturally, their diet also consisted of reindeer meat and reindeer milk. So, Sami people's whole lives revolve around reindeer. Without them, they would be completely different.
Mm-hmm. Now, this moss, or yagil, as it's called, they absolutely adore this moss. But I also believe that it has health benefits for humans as well. What makes it so special?
Yagil is their favorite food, but it's not the only thing. They also eat tree bark and grass. But reindeer moss contains all the nutrients and vitamins they need. And the Sami themselves also make Yagil brew. It's a great remedy for coughs and colds. It boosts your immune system. You can add the brew to tea or drink it as it is.
Well, bon appetit. There's a strong culture of fortune-telling here in Karelia. I see we have some stones here on the table with symbols on. What are these used for?
These are Scandinavian runes. They can be made of stone, bones, or pieces of wood. What matters are the symbols depicted on them. If you want, we can give it a try.
Well, you read my thoughts. That was going to be my next question. What does 2025 have in store for our program Inland Visions?
What you do is ask the spirits or gods your question. They answer after all. And then, without looking, you take three runes out of the bag.
Okay.
Feel if any of them call out to you. Then take the runes out and place them here.
There we are. What does this tell us about next year?
Wow, you've got the Fihyu rune. It represents wealth and gain. So whatever you need will definitely come to you this year. Whether it's intellectual wealth, material, or spiritual, whichever you need, you'll get it.
Wow. So is that the best one to pick out?
Well, runes are neither good nor bad, but in this case, yes, this is a good one.
Well, I'll certainly take that for next year.
Now, the second one is the Kenaz rune. It's the rune of inner fire, the fire in your heart, the fire of creativity. It's about having passion for what you do and the ability to share the same spark with other people, so it burns within them too.
That's very appropriate for our show.
It's a good rune for creative people. Let's see what the third one brings us. This is the rune of the wild bull, called the Urus. This rune signifies strength, health, energy, and the ability to push through any obstacle and work towards your goal. These are all very nice runes.
I'm very happy with those runes. Really, Slava, thank you so much for telling me more about the culture of the Sami people in Karelia, and I'd like to wish you all the very best for 2025 as well. Thank you.
Спасибо.